This is Crosswinds with Carl Zahn on 1590 WSMN. You think you've heard it all week long? Well, you haven't heard what Carl has to say. Carl Zahn brings all his experience in business and in entertainment to discussing the news of the day that affects us all in Southern New Hampshire. And his aviation experience helps him keep his cool when the controversy heats up and things get turbulent. So fasten your seatbelt, put your tray in the upright and locked position, and get ready to join the conversation. 1590 WSMN presents Crosswinds, Crosswinds with Carl Zahn.
Good afternoon, New Hampshire. Welcome back to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn. That's me at 1590 WSMN, Nashua's news and talk. All kinds of stuff going on to talk about here today. But before all that, we want to get on board here. Congressman Thaddeus McCarter joining us for the second time in studio. He'll be with us for the first segment here, so we want to try to get into his head a little bit. He's had a big weekend here in New Hampshire, coming in number 3 in the New Hampshire straw poll, which is pretty amazing considering it's only his first or second or third visit to the state here. So catching on already, as I predicted. So let's get right to it. Congressman, thanks for being with us again.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Carl.
No problem at all. So you had a good weekend in state here, I take it.
It's great. The voters, as you know, take their role very seriously. First in the nation primary, and they're kind enough to listen to messages, and they seem to be responding.
Well, as I predicted, I think your message will resonate with New Hampshire voters here as we get your name out. We just had a little reception with the congressman over at the Nashua Airport at Boyer Field. Had a nice chat with former Mayor Don Davidson, who was very impressed with the congressman. Took some literature with him. Let's talk a little bit about, quickly, the state of the country here. What's your take on, first of all, and I don't want to just trash on Obama, but what's your take on the vacation? Bad timing, right?
I think, in my mind, look, the policies have failed to date. The policies that he wants to enact are the same. They're going to continue to fail, so it doesn't matter whether he's in Washington or whether he's in Martha's Vineyard. The policies he's pursuing are counterproductive and injurious to economic growth and the security of the United States.
So in some ways, you're saying it might be a relief that he's on vacation for a little while.
No, I just think that the problem is, again, it's the policies that are in place, not whether a president needs time to recreate. I think the problem is he needs time to ideate and reverse course.
Ideate. What a great word.
You got to use cogitate. I'm sorry, Carl.
There you go. 603-816-1590 if you've got a question for the congressman and you'd like to chirp in. 816-1590. Yeah, I agree with you. It's the policies that have failed. I'm just kind of astonished at the tone deafness of our president at taking what I see as a lavish vacation. I don't think anybody holds against anybody wanting to recreate or have time with their family. But I can tell you, as a small businessman in New Hampshire, having a small business for over 30 years, and it's not like a whiny crybaby thing, but honestly, I haven't had a vacation for 2 or 3 years. We just can't afford it. So trips that we usually normally take as a family, we've had to cancel. And I think the president did himself a disservice by not saying, I'm going to stay at work. I talked with my family. It's a teachable moment, that phrase that he loves. And I explained to my kids that the country needs me right now in figure, if not in substance, and that he could have done himself a favor. So I'm just amazed kind of at the political tone deafness of it.
Well, it's also politically tone deaf to go on your blunderbuss tour and talk about how taxes and spending are going to be the key to revitalizing the American economy. But again, I go back to the fact that the president is spending time campaigning, basically, when he is working, instead of trying to solve the country's problems. And as someone who grew up in the 70s and 80s, I'm 45, you see what doesn't work, you see what will work. And unfortunately, they seem to be wedded to the model of the big welfare state that's imploding around us right now. They don't want to restructure for the future. And they can't seem to get their minds around the fact that that's what's happening in the lives of everyday working Americans or in business entities that are trying to be globally competitive. And as we've talked about, Carl, when you think about the economy in which you find yourself, aside from the stagnation, but the way that it's trending is towards liberty and self-government. You've got a generation of young kids that can't find jobs that know that in their daily lives they can access information around the world in the stroke of a key on a laptop. They can purchase a good or service on a BlackBerry if they want to, and they understand that that empowers them. And the model of government that says to young people especially that the government is going to take your decisions and your money and let a bunch of bureaucrats in Washington make your determinations and shape your lives is absolutely antithetical to what's happening in their lives. styles right now. Because the way I look at it, would you tell a kid today that the government's going to come in and tell you what to put on your Facebook? The government's going to come in and tell you what to put on your iPod? The government's going to come in and tell you what to tweet out to your friends? You'd say no. Well, then why would you let them control your health care?
Yeah, it's amazing to me, and we've talked this with our mutual friend Dennis Miller. It's ironic that
we're name dropping now. Yes.
Well, we're name dropping as I always do, but it's true. I grew up; we're about the same age. I grew up in a similar time to you, and I always marvel at the fact that my generation, that was, you know, didn't want to be under the thumb of the man, Big Brother, has now, in their later years, morphed to the point where we want Big Brother to take care of everything and decide what we'll eat and how much salt is good for us and how much trans fat we have in our food. So, yes, I think the model of, as you promote, self-reliance, liberty, ultimate freedom, is really a part of the conservative ideal. And I think that's why your message will catch on and well articulated as it is. I wanted to touch briefly on, at this meeting this morning at the airport, one of the people mentioned this super committee that's been formed. I appreciated your response as it's just another committee.
Yeah, it really should be viewed more as a task force charged with reporting back to the House and Senate. It'll go through the ordinary process at that point, members voting. It's not as if, you know, the media portrayal of it, that you're going to have members of the House and Senate showing up in a committee room wearing capes and cowls, arriving in Batmobiles. Yeah, it's not really what the super committee is about. And I assure you that very few of them would look good in a cape or cowl.
Well, it's odd that you would say that, because there's a town in Florida, believe it or not, true story, that spent $70,000 of stimulus money buying superhero capes. This is a true story. I don't know if you heard it, that it was supposed to, people were supposed to wear to fight unemployment. They were superhero capes printed with, emblazoned with, "We're going to fight unemployment." And just another example of a mere $70,000 of stimulus money that was spent, well, obviously, with some dynamic ideas in mind.
Well, again, as someone in Gen X, I still remember when the government was trying to deal with stagflation and rising inflation under the Ford years or Nixon years, and they had these little win buttons. Whip inflation now, as if that was going to solve the problem, if everybody just put a button on their lapel that said win. Nobody knew what the thing meant. I'm sure that if you were a radio station, WWIN, you'd be quite pleased with it.
Of course.
But to see what the Democrats are doing, again, using stimulus money to dress up superheroes with capes that have a message that we're all better, it goes back to the 70s. It even goes back to the NRA, not the Rifle Association, but the NRA, National Recovery Act, that Roosevelt passed and others. Mm-hmm. The Keynesian economics isn't going to work, and they can't deal with it, so you get a nice cape out of the deal.
McCotter2012.com. McCotter2012.com. If you want to learn more about Congressman Thad McCotter, I urge you to take a look. I've been taking with him, kind of watching him for months now. As everyone knows who listens to the show, decided to endorse him and support him several months ago, and hoping that he catches on, and suspecting that he will catch on in New Hampshire. Articulate, pragmatic, answers questions directly. So what's the first road to getting out of here, once you catch your breath from laughing? What's the first step the country has to take here to economic recovery? And they're talking about pumping more money into the economy, which is an awful idea, correct? I mean, look, when the president, we're at the point now the president speaks, the stock market plummets. Is it that bad?
Well, you can't blame the president for everything, and that's not our intent. Look,
that's what you think.
Well, of course. Yes. You can put on your cape, your cowl,
my button,
and you can be super Tea Party. STP.
Yeah, there you go. Super Tea Party.
Well, trademark infringement. But in all seriousness, Carl, what you have here is a situation where even Bernanke misses the point. They try to pump up the money supply through quantitative easing. This is not a money supply problem. It's a multiplier problem. You have to restructure the failed Wall Street banks. Their balance sheets are still out of whack. The toxic assets are still there. They are not recapitalizing. What we need to do is force them to recapitalize at the expense of their shareholders and bondholders, not their depositors, the American people. You need to make sure that they're, the ones that are insolvent are actually walled off, broken up, and their assets are sold off. You need to make sure their leverage limits are such they never collapse on the American people again. You need to make sure they know that the only thing too big to fail in America is her people and not these entities that put us on this course of fiscal stagnation. And unless you do that, it's not going to work. And so for the president to do that, that would mean that all the wonderful corporate jet owners and hedge funders that he's busy decrying would have to stop giving him money to help shield their bonuses, as they did in the stimulus when the Democrats passed it, or to actually forget the fact that in Dodd-Frank they put in place a chance to bail these companies out again, and they cemented in place, in my mind, the concept of too big to fail, which again is repugnant. But as we know, Carl, unless capital can flow down to the entrepreneurs and workers and innovators to actually grow this economy in the near term to create employment, and more importantly, to shape the future of America's economy in the 21st century, which I think will be one of innovation and unprecedented prosperity once we get it right, then we're going to remain in a stagnant economy, much like Japan did in the 1990s. And as you know, one of the reasons I'm running is because of the Republicans who supported the Wall Street bailout are not taking on this issue because they have to pretend that it worked. Mm-hmm. And there's other Republicans that are just simply afraid to take on these interests because they're very powerful. And they know that they have to go to them for financial assistance to try to get elected. I don't make that mistake. I'm from Detroit.
Well, and one of the reasons I admire Congressman McCotter so much, and we spoke about it this morning, this whole notion of you know, certain politicians, as you mentioned, Romney taking $1 million for PAC time after time after time again. And, of course, this is what corrupts the system and makes politicians beholden to those who write those kinds of checks to them. I do. I think that the notion of pumping more money into this economy, more borrowed money, doesn't work. And another one of the things I admire about you greatly is you're the only one, I believe, or one of few, who demanded and has called for an investigation into Wall Street and where that $700 or $800 billion of stimulus money went, incredibly, evanesced into thin air, and nobody ever, other than you, I think, and maybe a handful of others, asked, where did it go?
Well, no, the concern that I have is we've talked about, look, Bernanke runs a zero discount rate, essentially, keeps the interest rates low, so the bank's shares go up artificially. They come back, claim to have bailed out the tax, paid back the taxpayers. That's not what I'm particularly concerned about is how did we get in this crisis? You can't wake up one day and have and be told that the entire financial system in the United States is about to collapse, throw $700 billion at us, and we'll go away. But don't bother to look at how it happened because everything went right. Nobody did anything wrong. I find that difficult to believe, and as we've talked about, what you see is the Justice Department and others are saying that these companies are too big to investigate because their resources are so large and they can't bring any type of investigation against them. So they have this thing they call deferred prosecution whereby you get to they come to you and say, we may have done something wrong. And they say, and the government says, well, you can go fix it and come back and we'll talk about it. Now, imagine doing that if you were an ordinary citizen walking around the streets and have somebody come and say, well, you know, officer, I may have done something wrong. I don't think you'd say, well, fix it and call me later. They've gone from too big to fail to too big to jail, and that is non-sustainable or acceptable for the American people.
And it is also a patently absurd, as the congressman points out. Yes?
Well, it's insane.
Yeah.
But that's your government.
Yep, that's our government.
And thoroughly dysfunctional.
Yeah, and that's what we want to change. It's Crosswinds with Carl Zahn, 1590 WSMN. Sitting in with us also, comedian and good friend of mine, Lauren Bancroft, who's been sitting here absolutely well-behaved in the company of the congressman. Congressman has to fly. He's on his way back to Michigan to be with his wife and family, and he said he had to feed his kids because his wife has an errand to do.
No, she's working.
She's working.
She's a nurse.
There you go. And lives in his hometown of Livonia, Michigan. Another admirable attribute. T-Mat, thanks for being with us again. We hope to have you back in studio as you return to New Hampshire on several trips, we hope.
Thank you, Carl.
We'll be right back.
Captain Sig from Deadliest Catch. You're listening to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn.
Captain Sig from the fishing vessel Northwestern on the Discovery Channel hit series Deadliest Catch. My in-studio guest, now that she is less petrified, Lauren Bancroft, comedian Lauren Bancroft. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Carl.
Nice to be back in studio with you.
Yeah, ditto.
your parents listening today? Because I kind of harassed your parents last time they were in here.
I don't think they're listening.
No, probably not.
I told
not.
Them about it, but they're probably
most
not.
People listen once, and then they never listen again, which is exactly why we have such a little response to the show here. Also sitting in, my former producer, George Papoulias. George,
hey,
how
Carl.
Are you?
Good, and yourself?
Very good. Wonderful job with the congressman in there running the board. I appreciate it.
Yeah. How was the event last week, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't mind you asking, and I was going to mention that, by the way. Last Sunday, as everyone knows, we had Kim's concert over at Alpine Grove in Hollis. This was to support the Kim Cates Fund. So everyone from this area knows that Kim Cates was the wonderful woman killed in that horrific home invasion in Mount Vernon 2 years ago, October. Her daughter, Jamie, 11 years old, nearly killed in that attack and had to actually feign her death and wait till the intruders left and then had the wherewithal, incredibly, to call 911. She was there with her father and Kim's husband, David, who is just a remarkable, lovely man. And we had a great turnout. 400 or 500 people came out. They had 12 bands. They had two stages. They had stuff for kids. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful day. And I was thrilled to be a part of it. And our job now, the task upon us now, is to keep the Kim Cates Fund alive and keep people donating and keep people cognizant of that fund. This fund awards medical scholarships to students from the Amherst-Mount Vernon area who are pursuing degrees in medicine. Kim was a nurse that worked at St. Joseph's Hospital here in Nashua, as well as Catholic Medical Center in Manchester, and at the St. Joseph's branch in my hometown of Milford, at the Milford Medical Center. She was a wonderful woman, wonderful nurse, very, very compassionate woman. So David chose this as a way to remember her, and I think it's a fantastic way to do it. You think about a medical scholarship allowing people who are going into medicine, young kids who might not otherwise be able to afford the further education, by virtue of this fund, we'll be able to do it, hopefully save lives, and on and on and on it goes, like throwing a stone into a pond. The ripple effect of a medical scholarship fund is great. So KimCatesFund.org if you want to learn more about that. And we also, as you know, just had Congressman McCotter in studio. Great guy. Just love this guy. McCotter2012.com if you want to learn more about him. Lauren, how are you?
I'm doing well.
I think I already said that, didn't I?
Yeah. No, I'm still doing well, though.
Oh, you are? You're still fine? Okay. Still you got a little cup of water there. And,
he was following up on you, that's all.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Mm-hmm. Still here.
Happy to get you some saltines or anything like that if you need.
I'm good.
WSMNradio.com if you want to listen live or learn more about our programming here. 603-816-1590 if you want to call in. And Carl, K-A-R-L, from NH.com. Check out my website, my schedule of stand-up comedy appearances, blah, blah, blah. Well, the congressman was not anxious to pound on the president, but I'm going to pound on the president just a little bit because I think, as I mentioned with T-Mac, I just think it's crazy that the president takes this huge, expensive vacation at Martha's Vineyard, and I don't begrudge the guy his vacation. I really don't. I get it that everybody needs a break, and I wasn't crazy about Bush either, but I will say one thing about President Bush. When he vacationed, he went back to his ranch in Texas and, piled brush, which I found, something I can relate to a lot more than a big, expensive vacation. What do you think about the big, expensive vacation, Lauren?
I hadn't heard about it, but I think it's a little bit little bit silly.
Where were you that you hadn't heard about it? I'm just wondering. Do you live in a tunnel by any chance?
Not a tunnel.
No?
No, in a cave somewhere.
You live in a cave somewhere. So you're a spelunker.
I am.
No, interesting.
Not a lot of people know that about me. But
no, and not a lot of people know what spelunking means either.
They'll Google it right now.
They will.
That's actually what I'm doing
means,
right
don't
now.
You? That's amazing. But you knew, didn't you, spelunking, what that meant. That's unsettling in its own way. Well, Lauren may not have heard about it, but I did, and I just think it's, politically tone deaf for the president to go away on such an expensive, lavish vacation. It just sends the wrong message. It tells, the guys in office trying to tell you, I get what America's going through, and middle-class America, working-class America, and as soon as I get back from my 10 days on Martha's Vineyard, I'm going to, announce a plan, a jobs plan. So I don't know. I just think it's, I think he did himself a disservice. I don't think that the country, it's not like we're, you know, all nervous and shaky because he's not in the White House. I just think he did himself a disservice. Had he, his poll numbers are diving. So had he announced to the American people, look, I'm sacrificing my vacation with my family, just like so many of you are having to do at this critical time in the country's history, I think he would have got a big bump out of it in poll numbers. And, I don't know. It's odd. I think the guy, maybe he still believes that he's a shoo-in for 2012, but I think his chances are getting more and more slim as the economy continues to be stagnant, as the congressman points out. Unemployment still hanging around 9.5%. Things are not good, and that number is low, by the way. It doesn't account for people who are no longer collecting, people who are working part-time that want to be working full-time. So there's a lot of numbers in there that don't reflect in the poll numbers. Here's an interesting story, Lauren. These Verizon employees. George, you must have heard about this, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Got pretty messy.
Yeah. Lauren, I'm not even going to ask. I know she has no idea what I'm talking about. I can tell by the look on her face. Right? Am I right?
You're right.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love about you. Mm. We'll talk about comedy in a minute, something you're a little bit more versed in. Yeah, so for those of you who don't live in a cave like Lauren do, the Verizon employees have been striking. These union pinheads have been striking because Verizon is asking them to pay $100 a year towards their health insurance costs. And, you know, I understand the unions. It was a good idea when it started years ago. I think their heart was in the right place. Protect the worker by virtue of having a group and having some power and having a voice. But, I mean, folks, you can't deny that it's turned into something beastly. I mean, the unions have turned into something beastly. We saw it in Wisconsin 6 months ago with the big strike down there, the teachers union. And, you know, look, I get it. I know teachers. Good people. They want to teach children. I get all that. But when you saw those teachers in Wisconsin, those union people, you know, taking sick days to go out and protest, and the way they treated the Capitol down there in Wisconsin, where they're defecating in the Capitol, they're punching holes in the wall, basically tearing the place apart like the Rolling Stones in a hotel room. I don't know. Does anybody, is it just me at 603-816-1590 who is beginning to take a more jaded look at the unions?
You a
union member?
I'm not, no.
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 But it's weird, right? I mean, the rest of us, now you were saying you're a software consultant?
I work at an IT provider, yeah.
Yeah, IT provider, and you're bartending or doing something at Texas Roadhouse, and you get another job. So you're a young kid working hard.
Working very hard.
Yeah, working very hard for every dollar you earn. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm a business owner and, you know, small business. The most people I ever had at one time, I think, was 10 employees. But I always thought that was still a big payroll to meet every week. Small business or not, 10 or 12 grand a week in payroll keeps you awake at night, believe me. George Papoulias, ladies and gentlemen, the sound effects king over there. It's, you know, you can always tell when George is running the board. You'll hear a lot of Three Stooges clips and stuff like that. But yeah, as a small business owner, someone who struggles and is struggling now with business, you know, you look at these guys and you go, wow, they got union pay, they have union pensions. Their health insurance is practically paid in full, and then Verizon comes out and asks them to if they can kick in $100 a year, and all hell breaks loose. And what was happening was these Verizon union workers were going to homes where other Verizon employees were just going for normal service calls. Like, you call Verizon, you know, I've got a problem with my phone, and they show up. And then there were protesters outside of people's homes. And finally, they went to the home of the CEO of Verizon, of course, who they assume makes way too much money. And yeah, does the guy make too much money for what he does? Yeah, probably. But, you know, is that your business if you're an employee of the company? If you want to make what he makes, then go be the boss of the company and do whatever he had to do to be the boss. I just think it's weird. And one of these Verizon employees actually had his 10-year-old daughter out on the picket line. You know, while they're dropping the F-bomb and they're yelling scab at these other people, it's just so unseemly, if nothing else. It's bad behavior, right, Lauren?
It is. It's all over just an extra $100 a
year. Yeah, it's basically over $100 a year that they want to kick into their health. I mean, they've got a pretty lavish salary, as it turns out. Anyways, they've got a great, what I consider a great deal. But anyways, my point is, it's further evidence that the unions don't want to give. They're not happy, and the unions, and union members, by and large, and again, I feel like I always have to do a disclaimer here. I don't mean all unions. There are some unions that are not involved in this stuff and are doing what they were originally intended to do, which is protect the worker, make sure that you get a decent, decent pay scale and stuff like that. But there is this corrupt leg of the union, these powerful lobbies, that just, I think, are totally disconnected with the American people at this point and what the rest of us are going through. And it makes the rest of us sound like crybabies, including me, which I don't like. Right? Do I sound like a crybaby?
You do, and I also don't like it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the problem, isn't it? Honest. End up sounding like a whiner. But look, we're all in this together. The government keeps telling us we got to share the pain. All right, so let's share the pain. But invariably what happens is when it's time to share the pain, a lot of people who said they wanted to share the pain don't want to. Look at Obama healthcare as a perfect example. All these people that, you know, promoted it, said this is the best thing, we need healthcare for everybody. And then the minute it gets instituted, these same people are looking for exemptions. So there's been, as everybody knows, if you read the newspaper, there's been all these big groups, mostly unions, who filed for and received exemptions from Obamacare. So that, I guess they wanted the rest of us to have it, and then when it was time for them to have it, they wanted something else. Sounds a little fishy, doesn't it, Lauren?
Yes, it does.
Smell fish?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Don't look at me when you say that.
No, I didn't look at you, George. I didn't, you know, I wasn't implying that you smelled like fish at all. As you know, you've come in with many times with some very disturbing scents on you. That scents, S-C-E-N-T-S, by the way. And Remember the time you came in, you smelled like cat food? I mentioned it on air.
Well, I got a couple cats at home, so.
Well, that's what you say, but I've never seen a cat at your house. I've only been at George's house a few times, too, by the way, and we'll not talk about that any further. No. Let's do some local stuff here, because nobody seems to like what I'm talking about right now. Lauren is falling asleep over there. I think she really just came to get a picture of herself piggyback on Congressman Thaddeus McCotter. I can only imagine. Are you going to use that picture to blackmail him somehow?
Maybe.
Yeah, I would.
We'll see how it goes.
I would if I were you.
I'll put it on my Facebook.
If he becomes president, absolutely, right?
Yeah, well, yes.
Yeah, that was... pretty provocative picture that happened here in studio, folks. It'll be up on the website just as soon as I can get it there. In Merrimack, New Hampshire, now listen to this for those of you who are in, struggling relationships or relationships that are troubled. In Merrimack, New Hampshire, a man who had been served a protective order or was under the constraints of a restraining order yelled out, "I love you," to the person who had taken the order out, with a police officer standing right beside him, and he was immediately arrested for violating that restraining order. Now, Lauren.
Yes.
You seem like a reasonable person.
Thank you.
There was a time you had a restraining order against me.
Yeah.
Remember?
We've moved past that, though.
Yeah, we moved past that. I mean, what do you think? If someone yelled out, "I love you," and you had a restraining order, would that... Would you have him in handcuffs?
Probably not.
Yeah, it's not a really big deal, right?
I would just ask the cop to, okay, please get him off my lawn.
Yeah, you know, this is a type of thing, and this is what worries me about these restraining order situations, and so often it seems to turn into this. And believe me, no one has had more troubled relationships than me. Nobody.
You find that hard to believe, Carl.
Quiet, George. But I just don't understand, like, the whole restraining order thing. It always seems to be, you know, that restraining order, when you go to that step, it seems so often that what follows the issuing of a restraining order is violence. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I just say that kind of half-jokingly, because a lot of times it turns into something really bad or really violent. Or I think of the case a couple of years ago in Manchester, and I can't remember the woman's name, but, you know, a young couple married with one kid, and she had gotten a restraining order against her husband, and then he came back the next day and shot her father in the back or something. I don't know if you remember that story. It was awful. Her father was there kind of watching her, and you know, it just turned super ugly. So to me... And I guess this story kind of bears that out, because they said a police officer was with this guy, was standing there. So he must have been accompanying this guy to, like, get stuff out or something like that. But then to yell, "I love you," and arrest the guy, I just don't get that.
Yeah, Congressman Congressman McCotter, when he was here, he said that maybe he should have said "I love you" before the restraining order went into effect.
That was a good point. Yeah. Maybe if he had sent a card, there wouldn't be the restraining order. Mm. But anyways, my concern in this story is, and kind of the behavior in it, is that it almost seems to beg for a further response from this guy. So in other words, he yells "I love you" to whoever it was, his wife or girlfriend or boyfriend or, you know, his dog, whoever it was that he was being separated from by virtue of a restraining order. They arrest the guy for saying "I love you." So his legal situation now gets worse, and it just makes me think that, you know, it escalates the situation. It's like begging for escalation in a situation. It's not unlike the older woman who was accosting me across the street at the diner.
She was really laying it on thick for you.
Boy,
there.
She was something else. Huh? I mean, she wanted to sit on my lap. And I don't even know this woman. Honest to God, never met her before in my life.
She seemed very nice.
Yeah, right across the street at Jackie's Diner, ladies and gentlemen. I was, I won't say sexually assaulted, but boy, it was going there.
Maybe sexual harassment.
Exactly,
maybe.
By a woman who was clearly in her mid-80s, at least. Hey, nice to know I still got it.
You guys would be a cute couple, I think, Carl.
Me and the 85-year-old, I'm assuming, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you meant Carl and I.
Yeah, no.
That goes without saying.
Thanks, George.
I introduced her as my granddaughter, so that, you know, I didn't want to kill my chances with the old broad, just in case things don't work out with Lauren and I.
It's good to have backup.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Already got her phone number tattooed on my left shoulder blade. Crosswinds with Carl Zahn and the delightful and lovely Lauren Bancroft, comedian. You don't have a Facebook. You got anything? What do you have? SNL Bound.
I've got a blog.
What is it?
It's snlbound.tumblr.com.
And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, bound means that that's where she's hoping to go, not that she's secretly asking to be.
Should I rethink that?
Tied up.
Should I rethink that that blog?
SNL Bound and Gagged.
Okay.
Lauren Bancroft. Crosswinds, 1590 WSMN. Back after these brief words.
Hi, this is Danny Aiello. You're listening to Crosswinds with Carl Zahn at 1590 WSNN. I kind of like this guy.
And we like you too, Danny. DannyAiello.com. AIELLO.com. Lucky enough to have him an interview a year or two ago, I guess now, huh, George?
Yeah, actually. It was about a year and a half ago.
Yep. And it was great to go down and do comedy at his club when it was still open down there and meet him. What a great guy. Crosswinds with Carl Zahn at 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk, joined by my friend and comedian Lauren Bancroft, also of Nashua. All kinds of stuff happening here. The schools have seen a homeless rate spike. And they said the number of students in New Hampshire up 44% over 4 years. That's a pretty dramatic number. They're saying the number of homeless New Hampshire students now in 2009, 2010, 2,573. You go back to 06, 07, that was 1,439. And if they're saying that's up over 44%, then that number is pretty dynamic. That's a pretty sad state of affairs, huh? Homeless students?
It is.
Yeah.
I couldn't even imagine that.
No, I can't even imagine that either. And I think it's just a sign of the times, folks, with all the foreclosures and the stuff that's going on and unemployment. I was talking to someone just the other day about the homeless thing. And as a real estate agent also, I'm painfully aware of how depressed the real estate market is. And I wanted, if we had had more time with T-Mac, I was going to ask him about that because I think McCain had said way back when he was campaigning 3 years ago that we needed to really focus on the housing market because, you know, housing and construction plays such a role in the economy here in America. When people are building houses, the plumbers are busy, the sheetrockers are busy, so the pipe, you know, people are making pipe, people are making lumber, people are making all the things that go into home construction, concrete, blah, blah, blah. So with the housing market so depressed, and I remember McCain saying then, and I thought it was a good idea, painful as it was, that we really needed to restructure the mortgage and the banking industry then. In other words, people who are going underwater on their homes, for those who aren't familiar with the term, underwater is when you owe more on the house than what it's worth. And what happens is some people just end up walking away. They throw the keys away. You know, why am I going to pay a mortgage on a $200,000 house that's only worth 125 in this market. So McCain's idea was then that we should recalibrate everybody's mortgage down to what their house is worth now. So in other words, they recalibrate your mortgage. Your mortgage goes down to reflect the new value of your home. And the difference in that that number would have been supported by the federal government. Expensive? Yeah, no doubt. But as you just heard, when McCarter was in here, we threw $700 billion at the economy. It went nowhere. It did nothing. They don't even know where the money went. So to me, a very focused effort towards the housing market 3 years ago was a pretty damn good idea. And it would have cost the federal government some money, but it would have stabilized that housing market and would have kept people in their homes. It makes no sense to me to have someone who's paying a $2,000 a month mortgage, and, you know, because they're out of work or in hard times, they can only afford, say, $1,000 a month now. Why do the banks want to throw that person out of their home? I've heard story after story after story of people I know losing their homes. And these aren't, you know, they want to make it sound like, you know, people bought homes they couldn't afford. It's not all that. I know people who worked hard, saved money, did everything right, and still lost their home because they were out of work for a year and a half. You know, you can save for a rainy day. You can't save for a rainy decade. Nobody was ready for that. But to me, it makes more sense to keep those people in their homes, get the $1,000 a month that they can afford until they get back on their feet or the economy stabilizes. And what happened in many of these situations is the bank kicked them out of their homes, foreclosed. They were owed, say, $180,000 on it. They go to foreclosure and they end up selling a home at auction for $120,000. So the bank loses that $60,000. The taxpayer at some point is going to make up that $60,000. It's not figured in yet, but we know it's coming. And some poor family is out of their home when they could have afforded to pay something, but not the whole thing. Right?
Right.
Good. That's what she's here for, is simply to agree with me.
Carl's on for president.
Thanks, George.
Oh, my pleasure.
Let me flip another 20 over there. Lauren Bancroft in studio here, and George Papoulias also in studio. We talked about the I Love You restraining order violator over there in Merrimack. I also want to remind everybody I'll be back on Red Eye at Fox News next Friday, whatever date that is. It actually airs the following Saturday at 3 a.m., that hour when everybody's watching TV, of course. I wish they'd move that show up. Bank of America is planning big layoffs to cut costs. George has given me that. No big surprise there, right?
Right.
George, no surprise?
No, not surprised. With the way the economy is, everybody's cutting back.
What's happening to the show here? We seem to have been sucked into some kind of time warp or anything. It's just slowing down and everyone's talking slower and slower.
Sorry.
Yeah, Bank of America cutting 3,500 jobs.
3,500 jobs. So hopefully that will affect the fees. You know, the bank, I do a comedy bit actually about the bank fees. Banks charge you. There's a fee for everything now, right?
There is.
Yeah. You go into the company that I work for during the week, and when I go to their bank to cash my check, where I do not have an account, but I'm one of those people that likes cash. Do you like cash?
I love cash.
Do you like to feel it and rub it? And
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we have that in common. How about you, George? You like to rub cash all over your body?
No comment.
That's what I was afraid of. George, and by the way, just a stench of crisp 50s was emanating off of George when he came in the studio this morning. So for him to tell me that he didn't spend the whole morning rubbing himself with cash.
George, we should hang out later.
Absolutely.
That's what I was afraid of. Pure fiction. If you think that George Papoulias does not rub himself with new 50s every morning before he leaves the house. I don't even remember what I was talking about now.
Bank of America.
Yeah. Bank of America. Thank you. So yeah, I go to Sovereign Bank. I'm not afraid to drop names, as McCarter pointed out, and cash my check. And then, so about a month ago, they started. Now there's a $5 fee to cash your check if you're not an account holder.
That's a little steep.
Yeah, it's a little steep, and it's a little, I don't know, it's a little unfriendly. And the thing that I always find funny is when first they tell you that, and then they ask you if you'd like to open an account here.
No.
Exactly.
Screw
right?
You.
Because I know what they're thinking is, hey, if we start charging these people who don't have an account here, we're going to bring them over to my side. But as comedians, right, because we're probably like that, we're a little warped, yeah. My response is just the opposite. My response is more of an F you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So it costs you now $5 to cash your check. I know Bank of America, for whom I have no pity or self or anything, they, you know, during the winter when we do commercial snow plowing and stuff, as I mentioned, I love cash and I love to rub cash all over my usually well-oiled and completely waxed body. Bank of America 2 years ago was charging $10 to cash a check if you weren't an account holder. And on top of that, you couldn't use the drive-through lane at Bank of America if you weren't an account holder.
Playing hardball there.
Isn't that unbelievable? I remember trying to go through the drive-through. You wait in line. You're waiting behind cars. You get up to the window. This is when they first instituted this policy. And, you know, you put your check in, your license, the whole thing, and it comes back. And she goes, "You're not an account holder. You have to come inside." And I got into this, as you might expect, anyone who's listened to the show, of course, I got into a very lengthy brouhaha there at the drive-thru. I told the woman, I said, "You know, you're kidding, right? Because I'm here. I just sent you my stuff." So to me, the logical human thing to do is cash my check and then tell me, for further reference, sir, the next time you come, if you're not an account holder.
Mm-hmm.
But we got into this, you know, rather petty back and forth, you know, "No, you have to come inside." And I was like, "Well, you know, why don't I just come inside next time,
mm-hmm.
now that I know the policy? Or better yet, why don't you put a sign to that effect about a mile and a half behind me where I first started in the drive-through line?" So then I would have known like 45 minutes ago that I'm not going to be able to cash my check when I get up here.
Right. With that kind of customer service, why would you ever consider opening
Thank
an account?
Thank you, Lauren Bancroft, for pointing out.
Yes.
You know, speaking of Bank of America, I saw an interesting story on NPR about how there was the director of public policy, this guy James Mahoney, going up to Governor Rick Perry, who's running for president, like your guest Thaddeus McCotter, saying, "We're willing to help you out. We will help you out."
Help us out? Bank of America?
Yeah, willing to help out Governor Perry.
Oh, they're willing to help out Governor Perry.
Yeah.
Bank of America.
Yes.
Wow.
They could get involved in his...
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on NPR.org. So
that's a little odd for a bank to be...
Yeah.
I would call that basically an endorsement of Rick Perry, right?
He was at a breakfast in New Hampshire recently, and that's when the gentleman came down and talked to him, the guy from Bank of America, saying, we'll help you out.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And the rest of us, we have to go inside to cash our checks and pay $10, by the way, if you're not an account holder. Excuse me while I take a phone call from the Bank of America legal team in New York City, apparently filing suit against me. I'll call them back after the show. Lauren Bancroft in studio, the lovely and talented comedian. Any gigs coming up that you want to, you got Fodies coming up, right?
Yeah, Fodies Thursday night.
This show, Thursday night?
Yeah, show starts at 8.
What's the date?
Should be good.
22, 23, 24.
It's the 25th.
25th. Thursday, the 25th, you can see and hear Lauren Bancroft do her comedy right down here at Fodies Tavern in Nashua.
Ooh.
An up-and-coming comedy room, by the way, which I kind of like.
Mm.
Yeah, it's getting better all the time there, isn't it?
Yeah, every, you know, they do it twice a month, and every time it just, I really like it.
Are you there like every Thursday now, or?
If I'm not performing, I'm usually there when Alana has her comedy
night. Yeah, Alana Susco, who runs that thing, likes you. We were talking about you the other day behind your back.
Great.
Oh, you like that,
yeah,
huh?
Well,
you like
hey,
what
you're
people talk
about
behind
me.
Your back? Because we can do more of that if you
yeah,
like.
Yeah, hey, keep it up.
Okay, you say so. Lauren Bancroft, everybody, who loves having people talk about her behind her back, apparently. So if you'd like to do that, you can call me at 603-816-1590. WSMNradio.com. What'd you say there, George? 5 minutes. Oh, okay.
Left. And that was just the Fodies, by the way, a couple of weeks ago. Nice place.
Yeah, it's all right.
Got
yeah,
live
the
music
comedy
there.
Room downstairs is, well, you know, it's kind of like an inner city, you know, comedy room, kind of in the basement, a little dank,
I like. I like that the comedy is separate from the bar upstairs.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, it's
like
yeah, it's a great kind of almost city-like basement comedy room. So I think the place has potential. It's coming along, as they say. And George jogged my memory, which I barely have any of this morning. I had a late night doing comedy last night in Providence, so excuse me for being a little off my game. But yeah, Governor Rick Perry jumping into the race, turning things upside down, and it just goes to show you how things can change overnight in politics. And that's why I continue to support and hang on to TMAC, to Thad McCotter, because I still believe he's going to catch on up here in New Hampshire. I really do. He was, as I said this morning, at the Nashua Airport, and former Mayor Don Davidson was over there, and I spoke with Don, who's a fellow pilot, by the way. And I spoke with Don outside, and he was very impressed with McCotter. And that's the type of thing that kind of goes, and then he'll tell somebody, you know, word spreads. But Rick Perry, it just goes to show you how things can get turned upside down in just a weekend. I mean, so a week and a half ago, Rick Perry, governor of Texas, kind of talking. There were rumblings that he might get into the race. And up until then, Romney is kind of the given front runner for the GOP, someone that I don't think can win. Not crazy about the guy, Michelle Bachmann, who looks more and more like a nutcase to me all the time.
She did win that Iowa straw poll, though.
Yeah, she did win the Iowa straw poll, but that was expected because I think she's from there. And, you know, look, a smart woman, tax attorney, but then you start seeing the, you know, it's like when you think you have a new friend and everything's going great. It's kind of like Lauren and I, and then one day you're having lunch, and I noticed a dead cat in her lunchbox, and then all of a sudden you go, wow, something a little weird about this person. I don't know.
Really crazy.
You remember that, right?
Yeah.
But you said that was an accident. You knew nothing about it, and you didn't know how it got in there.
Well, I didn't mean for you to find it.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. I was just nervous.
Yeah, that was an awkward moment for both of us. But that's happening with Michelle Bachmann as she makes these gaffes. I mean, last week it was, you know, hey, it's Elvis's birthday, when it was actually the anniversary of his death. And, you know, why pretend? I know, isn't it awful?
Sorry.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge gaffe. You're running for president. You know, you can't guess about that stuff.
Jeez.
And all it tells you is what you knew in the first place is that Michelle Bachmann and her husband never listened to Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, come on. These are the squarest people ever, you know. And then a month or so ago, it came out that they had run this camp for people to come and pray away the gay. You know, if you're homosexual or gay, they had this, her and her husband years ago had this camp where you could come and they thought pray away what they see as some kind of an anomaly that, you know, if you work hard enough at it, you can convince yourself that you're not gay, that it's some kind of disturbing thing that you should deal with. And you know what? That stuff's just going to kill her. And I remember thinking then, man, because I liked her. I thought she was smart. I like a lot of things she said. But I knew then that was a turning point. I can't support her. And since then, it's just been one gaffe after another. She was in Concord, New Hampshire, saying that, you know, confusing it with Concord, Mass.
Oh.
And then the thing with last week with, happy birthday, Elvis. No, nudge, nudge. It's actually the day he died. So she's going nowhere. The question now will be to see if Rick Perry catches on. But I'll tell you what, I think Rick Perry, I like a lot of things about him, but the evangelical thing, the big prayer meeting he held, it's going to work against him. You know, people don't want to talk about religion right now. They want to talk about jobs.
I agree.
Hey, Lauren, thanks for coming in.
No problem.
It's always a pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
You're going to come back again, you think?
Maybe.
Yeah, you got a little scared this time, right?
Probably.
Yeah, and there was that incident with the congressman that probably keep you back. George Papoulias, is always a pleasure having you running the board, my friend.
My pleasure.
Yeah, glad to have you back. It's Crosswinds with Carl Zahn. We'll be back next Sunday with more stuff just like this, which if that doesn't entice you to tune in, I don't know what will. Have a good afternoon. Thanks for being with us.